welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Shitty.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not good.
No, no. We're in mourning up here again in MCBA land. Because my friend, Corey's friend, old employee of Hot Comics and one of the big kahunas of the MCBA, Mike Edmondson, passed away over the weekend. And I really haven't had time to really process it. We did a show 5 years ago when our good buddy Nick Post passed away. And I got word on that when I was up north on vacation, and, you know, word went around, and we did a show later about a week after he passed away. When another friend of ours, Dave Watkins, passed away, he unfortunately happened to pick the day that Stan Lee passed away. So I feel a lot of people might have overlooked, well, not locally, but, his passing. But this one is still too soon, too raw, but it's just something that we're going to talk about, because Mike was a big part of my life, a big part of Hot Comics, a big part of the MCBA. I could probably fill a podcast or two with Mike's stories, but I want to throw it back to you, Corey. When did you and Mike first meet?
It was at the shop. And we have told this story quite a few times. It was, you were at the smaller shop, and you'd had your you called them scrubs, right?
Yeah.
So they were younger kids who were working at the shop. One of them left to get a job at Best Buy, and one of them went over to another Hot Comics. And you were left without an employee for a little while. And I came in one time. I think I was actually bringing the comics from Cap City, because I think it was that Fridays or Wednesdays? I don't even remember.
Back then, I think it started on Fridays. Although sometimes it was Thursday night, but usually Friday morning.
But there were times I would pick up the comics on my way after work. I would stop at the Cap City warehouse and throw them in the little Geo Metro. And, or was it? Yeah. No, it was the Mazda TLC.
Jeez. That had to have been Thursdays, because the comics would be ready to set out Friday, but they'd show up Thursday. And depending on when, if they showed up before the warehouse closed, you could get them. If you showed up like after 7 or 8 o'clock, you had to wait till Friday morning.
So I would pick them up, throw them in my little Mazda TLC, bring them over to the shop. And one time I was bringing them over, and I went in, and you weren't there. You'd gone to get gas. And there was a guy I didn't know behind the counter. And it was Mike, and a big guy. Not just, he was... Well, we called him the Human Planet. He was a big guy. He was, 6'2", 6'3", something like that. And he was working as a bouncer at a country western bar. And somehow he had started working for you. So we bring in the comics. We start working on them. And that's how I found out that he was more of an art guy. He knew artists, didn't know writers as well, basically bought comics for the art. There were times he wouldn't even know what the stories were, and a big fan of, I think it was Bill Tucci's art and John Buscema and that school of art. And that's how I met him. Joe, how did you meet Big Mike?
Mike and there was another guy, and I forget his name. They were employees of Target. And this actually will solve the mystery. For the longest time, Mike and I could never remember how he got hired. And
to the point where it became a joke.
Yeah. And what had happened and this kind of covers a little bit what you're talking about. When the shop started, when Hot Comics split, Brian, Dan, and Jess went over to Hot Comics Edina, and Dave Storberg, the scrub, stayed with us. And because he lived across the street, so it was real easy for him to get to the shop. And eventually, Dave, I mean, he was an employee. He got a regular paycheck. We'd always call him the scrubs. And Butch would have to give you the story of how they started hanging at Hot Comics. And I think he did on a podcast or two. And anyways, Dave got to a point where he decided he wanted to move on, you know, it just for whatever reason. And people really gave him a hard time because they're kind of like, really, you're going to go work at Best Buy instead of working at a comic store? And whatever, you know, I left amicably. I took Dave out to dinner. We got an exit interview. He said his biggest thing he didn't like was being left alone in the shop. And I told him, I said, I guess I understood that. But also, on the other hand, it shows that I trust you, that you're able to do a big, you know, responsibility in order to do that. And I said, that's something you definitely want to mention in a resume, you know, that you were able to do that. Now, what I figured is that when Dave was leaving, I think it was September. And I thought, well, you know what? I just won't have an employee for a few months. I had already bought out Pat. And, you know, I had to deal with Pat if he could come in. And if an emergency happened, he could run the shop. But Pat had gotten burned out because, you know, he was working full time and then doing weekends at the shop. And eventually we, you know, we told a story on one of the solo Joes about us deciding, you know, we didn't want to do the shop, but we tried to resell it back to Brian. He kind of gave us a real goofy lowball offer. And then we were like, well, fuck that. So I bought Pat out over time. Again, Dave left. And so I thought, well, you know what? I could probably do this. It'll be a couple months, but I'll get Thanksgiving off. I'll get Christmas off. I'll get New Year's off. So I actually have some days off that I can actually do. And then, of course, you know, like Christmas Eve, I closed early, and New Year's, you close early. So the timing was pretty good. Although I got to say, by the time February rolled around, I was starting to get burned out because, again, you know, every day I had to stay up at night with Dana, who, of course, was a very, very fussy sleeper, would not sleep alone. So I would either hold her. Eventually, we got one of those rocking swings that would rock. But we weren't smart enough to get the automatic rocking swing. No, we got the cheap one that you got to wind up every 45 minutes. So it would tick, tick, tick. I'd fall asleep. And then as soon as it would stop, Dana would start crying. Wake up, wind it up. So that was my nights. And then at 6 a.m., I'd go to sleep. And then I'd have to wake up in time to get the shop open at noon. Mike, and again, the other guy I can't remember, I used to talk a lot with because they'd bring in toys and things. And eventually, I got to the point where, like I said, I was burned out. Mike came into the store one day and was talking about how he was just getting tired of working Target. And I said, well, how about that? I'm looking for someone to work here. And that's how he became an employee. And I don't remember when that is in terms of the timeline. I'd have to think a little harder on it. But he stuck with me for quite some time. I mean, we told a story about how Mike got Scott Liddell in. You know, I come walking in and who's that signing my X-Men books? And that was actually really good. I forget the name of the book that came after. Was it X-Men Omega? No, X-Men Alpha, X-Men Omega, and then it was a gold book. And I can't remember what it was called. They had those three foil covers around Age of Apocalypse. And I ordered a ton of them because if you ordered 300 of them, you got a free Marvel neon sign. But, you know, I mean, I sold enough to make my money worth, but boy, we're going to have those things forever. But when Scott Liddell came in, he signed all the ones we got left and we were able to blow those out. So that actually worked out pretty good. We were looking for a water cooler, trying to get not a water cooler, a pop cooler, because we were selling pops and we wanted to do it. And one day I come in and there's a Coca-Cola fridge there. So how did that happen? I said, well, a guy came in and said we were looking for it. And he came, dropped it off. As long as we order pop from Coke and we only fill it with Coke, we're good. The other thing I loved with Mike is that I loved bringing him to Comic Cons because it would be like, okay, Mike, here's $300-$400. He just had this ability to go find comics at the cheapest price possible and bring them back. You know, so imagine like the hottest comic out were Danger Girl Gen 13 and Witchblade. He'd bring this stack of them back. And I said, guess what I paid for those? I go, holy shit, $300? Nope, $50. So he just had a way of doing that, just finding stuff. I've told this story, I think, in the past about when Little Mike came to work. And part of me thinks we hired Little Mike about the same way. You know, like, I need a job. Wait, well, we need somebody. Come on, work with us. But Mike's first day, and I believe this was in the big store. So this was like the last 3 years. But it would be, he would come in and we would move all the subscriptions to the back of the store. We'd lay out all the books on the table and then I would print out all the subscriptions. So they would know, okay, out of 100 X-Men, I need 89 of them for subscribers. And then we would just take turns, Big Mike, Little Mike, filling the holes, whereas I would do all the independent books, you know, like onesie, twosies, things that weren't worth printing out a whole thing for. Later on, when Christy joined us, she would be up front dealing with the toys and that. But the day Mike come in, I remember I was on the left side doing books. Little Mike was in the middle. Big Mike was on the other side. And, of course, I start out. And Little Mike kind of does double take. And then Big Mike, he's like, jeez. What is up? Hey, Mike. If you're going to keep up with us, you're going to have to learn to hold your own here. So get it all done before the customers show up. That's all I can say. I'm just looking through some. I don't have a lot of pictures of the shop. But
I would like to point out his first appearance in the Cray comic book. He was cover featured on Cray number 5.
Oh, yeah. And probably got hired not too far from the way it was portrayed in there.
So it starts with Cray in the shop.
Yep.
You listen to me. I'm going to go out for 5 minutes and get gas. The whole damn shop is caving in on my head. Are you going to pick up your books or what? I haven't been in almost a week. Darn store's going out of business. I've been working 24-hour shifts at Targetto. Ha!
Targetto.
Jesus Christ, in a jacuzzi. Look at all this. Look at all these Hulk hands. Watch the shop, Mike. I'm going to be back. What? And that's how Mike showed up in the Cray comic. Basically, he was a customer. You yelled at him and left, and yep. He just stayed working. And
now, if you pull out a copy of Cray 5.5, it explains how he got the name The Human Planet. Because Butch and Jess come wandering and went looking for Dave. I canned his ass a while back. You know, not really. And they're talking, and they go, what's Cray going on? I'll make the same decision today. No higher up's going to tell me. He's like, geez, what's going on with him? What's he talking about, Butch? Firing Dave. He's going to fire Dave? Mike, Dave already quit. Oh, man, Dave quit? Yeah, he blew his top and stormed out in a fit of rage. Blew his top in a fit of rage? Oh, man. Now Mike's working here. Oh, man. Yeah, and you better tell your little friend here. You can obviously tell that's me. Around here. We don't need him around here, except to pick up his books. Because I got a new guy who follows order here. I got Mark here. Mike. Yeah, the Human Planet. Justice tapping a Butch's chest. Oh man, the human planet. costs more to feed him, but at least he doesn't charge customers screaming from, make customers go screaming from the store like Dave did. Oh, I gotta go get gas. Which isn't too far off. I used to say that a lot about Mike. Ah, it costs a fortune to feed him, but he's worth it. Because there'd be guys, Mike would tell me stories of guys who would come in, you know, look around, see Mike, and just turn around and leave. Mike was a nice guy. I'm pretty sure he could hold his own. He gave me a neck rub once, and I told him, oh, my God, that I feel like death is around me. There was a time the neighbor next door, Carol, a couple kids robbed, and it just so happened we were out front, and they bolted. And I think Butch and I hopped in a car, and we were able to get one of them run down, and we brought him back. And Butch and Mike, and then there was another customer, another big guy named Billy. They basically went to help Carol. When the cops came, the kid like, oh, my God, they beat me up. And the cop looks at the kid, looks at these three guys, looks back at the kid. He goes, dude, if you got beat up, there'd be nothing left of you. Eventually, they haul him off. Now, you'd mentioned Mike was a worker at the Rope and Dope. We call it Rope and Dope. It used to be a country western bar in Invergrove Heights called Rodeo. And did I ever tell you about Mike's first day at work?
No.
So Mike's first day of work happened to be his birthday. And I told him, I said, well, that's not right. Why don't you take the birthday off? He goes, no, I'll come in. Mike oftentimes would work holidays. So I'd be open limited hours like on Memorial Day, Labor Day, July 4th, because he always said his friends really didn't get up until like 10 o'clock. And so he'd get down to the Rope and Dope and then he would start. That's when his nights would work. And they'd go till like 3 in the morning. He'd go home, sleep, and then he'd come up work at the shop. Well, I told him, I said, well, it's your birthday. You want me to come in case you're late? No, I won't be late. It's my first day, and I won't be late. And I'm thinking, okay, let's see. It's Mike's birthday. His friends get up at 10 p.m. and start partying. He's working at the Rope and Dope. It's his birthday. He's not going to make it. And he didn't. I showed up at noon, well, a little before noon, and opened the store, and guests would come wandering in at 1 o'clock. And he was, oh, my God, I thought you were going to fire me. I said, no, I just figured you were going to be late. I said, I'm not stupid. I've been doing this a while. I got to go get gas. And then I left. But and really, like I said, Mike was an awesome employee. I love that he worked holidays. I'd always pay him double time. None of the other employees wanted to work it. So I said, if you're willing to do it, he even said he would do Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving. But I was like, no, those are the days I'm just going to stay closed. Because, again, his nights didn't start. There was a day once, though, I did send him home. It wasn't because he was drunk or hungover. But he came walking in and he was moving really slow. And I say, Mike, what happened? He goes, oh, somebody took a shot at me at the Rope and Dope last night. Mike would work as a bartender or the bouncer up front. And I said, what happened? He said, well, he punched me right in the ribs.
Oh.
And I'm like, what happened to him? Well, the owner got a hold of him. And by the time I got out, there wasn't much left of him for the cops to pick up. And I just told Mike, go home. Just take it easy. Don't worry about it. You're covered. I didn't really have many problems with Mike. I was kind of lucky in that sense. I know there's a couple times he got in clashes with a few of the goofier employees, but I was like, hey, what can I do? I need Mike. I need you. You guys work it out if you can. I know him and little Mike smoked a lot. I remember yelling at him one time. I said, guys, I am so tired of seeing an arc across the front of Hot Comics of cigarette butts. And I swear, if I come in here and I see more cigarettes, I'm going to have you field strip their fucking parking lot. Yeah, as if I could have done it. And eventually what they did is it was like a little tiny hole in the concrete. And Mike would slip his cigarettes down there. I don't know where they went. probably the underworld or whatever. Where are these cigarette butts coming down? Mike left Hot Comics the way anybody left. He was older. He needed a job that paid money. I think there was a point in time. You know, oftentimes I talk about how did I get through the 90s. There was a time, and I don't recall how long, if it was a couple months or 6 months, where Mike agreed just to take merchandise and not money, because he was making money at the Rope and Dope, to try to get me through the period. And eventually it got to the point where he was just like, I can't do this anymore. I need to get paid. And I'm like, well, just, you know, remember, you're getting comics as compensation. If you want, I can do that. We can get you back on a paycheck, which is what we did. But I felt bad because this was the 90s. I looked, I couldn't do healthcare for anybody. I was getting it through my wife. I paid him way above what was minimum. And I told him that. I said, this is kind of just a fun filler job. I said, I don't have the means to pay you benefits. I can give you, you know, discount on your merchandise that you buy. I can, you know, give you holiday pay. I can give you double time if you want to work a holiday. I gave everybody like a $5 allowance because oftentimes they'd be in the shop alone. I said, if you want to have pizza in or you want to, you know, bring something in, just take $5, leave me the receipts. I could never make it so that I could give them what I really wanted to. I wanted to give them healthcare. I wanted to give them, I think I gave them vacation time. I don't recall if I did or not. And eventually Mike ended up leaving. I remember because little Mike was like, well, what happens when he leaves? I said, well, if you want him, you got his hours. And then little Mike lasted all the way to the end, I guess. So it was nice because, like I said, I lucked out. Pretty much all the employees I had at the shop were very dependable. I don't have any concerns with any of them. I had no problems letting them run the place alone. I'm just looking through my pictures of that I have. If you go to my Facebook page, Hot Comics St. Paul, pictures with Mike. There's one where we had Colleen Doran come to visit. She came, did a signing at our shop, and then went to the MCBA Comic-Con after that. Going down, there's another shot of him with when we had Pete Krause come to visit. And then, of course, was a picture of the three of us with Scott Liddell. And then one of my favorites, Jess in a fit of rage attacking Mike at the old shop, which is basically Mike just holding him off with a hand and Jess could barely reach him. So
I would like to point out my favorite night when Mike worked at the shop was when we went down the local wrestling promotion, Steel Domain Wrestling, with Eddie Sharkey running it. Had a wrestling show
down to the Rope and Dope. Yep.
Down at the rodeo in Invergrove Heights, and there were next to nobody there. And Mike was working, so basically he was just kind of hanging out with us as we were at ringside. And that's where we wanted to buy a beer for Eddie Sharkey when he was the ref, but he would go, no, I don't drink beer. So Mike bought him a shot. And, of course, he accepted that. So all through the rest of the matches, we were buying Eddie Sharkey shots as he was refereeing the matches.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of fun. And it was the only time I ever got to see Mike at the rodeo. And he was kind of the king of the castle there. It was impressive how, you know, even the bartenders would come up to him to go, what do I do about this? What do I do about that? And he was just a bouncer, but it also showed, I think, what was going to happen later on. Now, I don't know much about his full-time job, but I know that he was involved with the comic conventions, with the MCBA and worked with Nick. And the big thing that he did was he was the guy who would pick up people at the airport. So he would be running the whole time, but he got to spend time with all of the comic creators. So he was the guy that everybody knew. He would fill them in. Okay, here's the hotel. Here's the convention. Here's when we eat. Here's this. Here's that. So when you go to the Minnesota MCBF's page, you'll see a lot of comic creators who will talk about him. Amy Reeder had this wonderful picture of her in his monstrously huge jacket, and she talks about how, you know, this was her first time in Minnesota, and even though it was spring, it was really cold, and she did not know it would be that cold, so Mike gave her his jacket for the convention. And after Nick passed, three people took over the convention, and Mike was one of them. And Mike kind of, he and his wife, Lisa ran the prize table. And Mike was kind of the, he took the glad-handing part of Nick's job. Nick had a whole bunch of things he would do. But the biggest thing he would do would be kind of be the best friend of the comic creators as they would come in. Mike took over that job and was excellent at it. He knew all of the creators' work when they came in. He had, you know, been in touch with them to see if they needed anything. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Spring Con and Fall Con do so well, because we've always given that personal touch to the creators, where it's not, we don't just, here you go, here's your table, good luck. It's, no, you're here, you're hanging out with us, and we're your pals. And he really epitomized that. He was so good at just connecting with people. So I think that's one of the things you'll notice if you go to the Minnesota Comic Book MCBF's page. You'll see a lot of people talk about how he would just connect with you immediately. And even though he got busier and busier as the years went on, he was always able to do that quick connection.
And I am going crazy trying to figure out, because you remember the most famous thing that happened with Mike at the MCBA.
That he took all of Frank Cho's money?
Oh, no. I'm talking even better than that.
You'll have to fill me in.
Lisa and Mike got married.
Oh, yes.
At the MCBA. And
2008 or 9.
I don't know. I'm looking for the picture.
It was either 8 or 9.
And what had happened is I think they – I don't know. I put Nick – it had to have been something Nick did, because there's – I think Nick talked him into it. Said, let's get you a deal. We'll do it here. We'll do it. They did it after the first day in the grandstand. All I remember is Terrence Greep was their flower girl.
Len Strzuski was the one who officiated.
Thank you. Cause I was trying to remember who did that. And, it was just amazing. I know Brian Wilson and his band played, and we took a lot of pictures. They're all up on the MCBF's page somewhere. I'm just kind of scrolling through Mike's page now, and a lot of people tagging him, and family and friends and people from the MCBA. And one of our friends, Ben Piskett, good friend, hell of a human being, has passed away. Mike was an incredibly kind, smart, caring man whom he and I shared a passion for art and the collectability of comic books and the backdrop of the comic industry and the community. It was such a deep pleasure to have been a friend of Mike's. Every time we talked, it was a good time. Every time our conversations concluded, my day got better because of Mike talking with me. And he says, I feel a real sorrow of his passing. And just like me, to me, I feel like my heart's broke. I don't have words to describe. I'm just babbling, trying to remember, how much time and fun we had, not only at the MCBA, but at the shop. I believe the last time I ran into Mike and Lisa were at the, how do you say his last name? Nigen? He had a con down in Hastings that I went to.
Oh, I didn't go to that.
No, you didn't, but I mentioned it on the podcast.
Oh, Tom Nguyen.
Nguyen, thank you. Yeah, he did a creator con before the pandemic hit hard. And what's worse, I've been talking with Mike to try to get him on the podcast, because every time I see him, he's like, you got something wrong. I opened my mouth with the tales of the shop and I said something wrong. And we could never get a time where we could do it. And now we never will. Even I stopped by and talked to Butch yesterday, because Butch isn't online. He's not on Facebook. His computer works when it decides to work. And I went and rapped on the door. And Butch was like, I was just thinking about Mike yesterday. Just thinking, we should have called him. And just, it's almost like the universe was just all in the same, like, hey, something's going on with Mike, but we didn't know what was going on. Just so we're not sugarcoating it, much as we did with when Nick passed away. Mike did pass away of heart issues. Again, he smoked. He was overweight. I don't know what his stress situation was or how he ate. But you got to take care of yourself, folks, because there's a lot of people that love you out there and they don't want you to go. Last week we talked about like Denny O'Neill dying. He passed away. And, there's sadness in that, but he was 88. He's got a huge career and we admire him for what he did. And Mike is younger.
By the way, he was 81.
80's a long, doesn't matter. 80's a long fucking time to live. Mike, I don't know how old Mike is. I was under the impression he was at least 5, maybe 8 years younger than me. And like Nick and like David Watkins, just gone too soon. And I'm sure the celebration of his life is going to be this Thursday. And maybe next podcast, if I hear some decent memories or I see some pictures that jog a memory, I'll talk about it next week as well. But to me, it's too soon. It's too raw. And I don't have anything meaningful really to say other than I wish I had more pictures of the shop and of us and the memories. And maybe I wish I had taken him along with me when I got gas, but now I would have had to feed him. When he set the alarm off at the shop?
No.
I thought he might have said that, sir. I know when we did we were toying with live podcasting at the cons that he actually, there was one con and it might have been a fall con where he actually got to sit down when I interviewed him one-on-one for a little bit. But what I didn't realize is Mike was colorblind. So he could never tell when the red light was on, if the alarm was on or not. And I was out getting gas. And at the time I was at our Minnetonka store, which was run by three guys who later foreclosed or whatever. And while I was over there, I get an alarm from Mike. And Mike's like, Joe, I can't get the alarm to stop. And I said, well, put in the code. Yeah, but it won't do it. We got the false alarm code, right? It's in the register. Call the company and give them the false alarm code and they'll turn it off. Okay, hang on, let me try. Well, what happens is when he puts the code in, it has immediate priority on the phone line, so it cut me off. And so I'm trying to call him back and I can't. Now this is before cell phone, so it wasn't like I could call his personal cell phone. I had to call his cell phone. Mike tells the story that a cop pulls up and One of the cops gets out of the car and the other guy is in the car, but he's holding the shotgun. And Mike's explaining, I work at the shop. I set the alarm off. I can't figure out how to turn it off. I got the passcodes, blah, blah, blah. And the other guy's like, okay, that's funny. And the cop talking to him was laughing. The cop sitting in the car was not. And so eventually Mike figured out, you know, he got the alarm set. And of course, I'm on the other side of town at most an hour drive over. So eventually I'm like, well, guys, I better get going. And when I got back, the shop was all tight, closed, so everything was good. I do know how we figured that out once was one day I came in and the alarm wasn't set. And I called Mike. I said, didn't you set the alarm? Yeah. I said, oh, you know what? You got to watch for the red light. And that's when he said, I'm colorblind. I can't see that. I said, oh, okay, well, we'll set it up so it beeps. And we had a really cool alarm system because it was I could get Mike a code and Christy a code and little Mike a code. And I think you had your code.
Yep.
Everybody had a code. So it was not only that, but then I could tell if somebody came in the shop and set it off, I'd be like, well, what code is it? Oh, okay. If it's Corey Strode, that's okay. Back then it was. Later on, I probably said, oh, I just bust the guy. Throw him in with the raccoon.
Send him to hell.
You're fired. I don't work here. Oh, really? Well, they hired. I got to go get gas.
A couple of things I want to point out about Mike. First, the art auction at the MCBA conventions was always fun when he and Nick decided they wanted something. Because they wouldn't stop. And it reminded me a lot of when you would play poker and he had a good hand and Nick either had a good hand or just wanted to screw him over. They would go at it. They would bid. They wouldn't even look at the guy running the auction. They'd just be looking at each other. Nick with that big shit-eating grin and Mike with that look of, I'm going to kill you if you don't stop. I can't even tell you individual pieces of art, but there was one time where Nick knew that Mike wanted it. And he always called Mike Eddie for Edmonds.
Eddie.
And Nick, when that piece of art came up, Nick had that twinkle in his eye and just went, $300.
$300.
And Mike, $325. $350. And they went up, and I think it stopped around $800 when Nick finally said, I don't even want it.
I don't want it. That actually tickles a few memories because I know for a while, yeah, it was like Mike and I were the destroyers. I mean, we were the ones that would pick up art. And this is where I remember picking up a lot of Pete Krause's Shazam art, which is fairly rare because Pete doesn't sell his art. He'll donate it to different organizations in that. Because I recall after a time where I think like Mike dropped, like you said, $800, and I think I dropped probably $700. And we kind of looked at each other. How did we become the destroyers here? There were certain people who would come in and just lay waste to the art auction because of stuff that they wanted, Nick being one of them. And then eventually it ended up being us. It didn't always, Mike didn't always, fight it out. I remember there was one time there was this vintage toy that was there. Mike was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I think I'm going to go for it. And it had a pre-bid of like $100 on it. And Mike's like, okay, we got a pre-bid of $100, but somebody just bid $125, so we're going to start at that. And Mike goes, okay, $150. And then in the back of the room, you hear a very annoyed Brian Messick, $175. And Mike's like, ooh, I didn't realize it was him. I'm not going to bid against him.
The other thing that he brought to the convention that I don't think got talked about very much and was a passion of his was greyhounds. He got hooked up somehow with this group that rehabs greyhounds after they've been on the racing circuit, because greyhounds that have been involved in races often don't do well after the races because they've been trained just to run and they take a lot of rehab. I know that he had some rehabs, and that's when there was always a table there for the group that does that.
Yeah, now, they brought
the is there still character. Dog racing in Minnesota, or has it been completely shut?
I don't know. If there is, it would be at Canterbury Downs, and I have
Canterbury
no
never had it. There was another place that did. And I know that there were places working hard to get rid of it. Let me take a look. I'm going to look that
St. up. St. Croix had a dog track, I think. And they might have closed that down as well.
I'm taking a look here. All right, there are some, but it's all sled dogs. So the Greyhound racing has been ended. But I know that he adopted at least two and maybe more. Because he didn't post on Facebook much, but when he did, it was either about his wife Lisa, the prize lady, or his Greyhounds. And he's the one who got them involved in the convention, basically to give them a place where they could talk to people and raise money and try to help rescue these dogs. Which, if there's one thing that's really cool about the Minnesota conventions, is that we kind of started saying, if we're going to do this, we need to have a charity involved. And the first year we had George Hagenauer, who brought up the art auction from Chicago, and that was for the Literacy Council. And then over when Nick took over, it moved more toward the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And one of the people who worked on the convention, his wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure, Pat's girlfriend / wife had lupus. So we had the Lupus Association there for years and years and years. And Mike brought in this charity that he cared about very deeply. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of the convention, the fact that we're always looking for ways to bring in charities that we care about.
Now, when I did my second store, Crazy Comics, it was a little different because, again, it was a smaller shop. And I actually lucked out because I was able to get a lot of people lined up to work because I still had my full-time job at TSA. So I would come in and I would work Wednesday, which is the day the books come out. Tim Kaiser would work Thursday. Mike would work Friday. Big Mike.
I worked Friday.
Okay. And then Little Mike Sunday, Big Mike Saturday. And because it was a smaller shop, it was basically, you guys just work for credit. And, you know, it lasted a couple of years. But I didn't really see Mike a lot during that time because, again, I was working TSA. The 2 days I had off were Tuesday, Wednesday. So Tuesday would be my day off, sometimes a prep day. Wednesday would be the day I'd go get comics and that. But he was there. Mike always told my wife, because my wife was like, you know, we're going to just sell the place. Mike was like, I got a buck. And when I had Crazy Comics, he was like, tell you what, I'll give you 10 bucks for this shop. Sold. And he was like, I tell you what, I'll give you an extra 10 for the next shop he tries. And she's like, oh, no, he ain't going to live for that. Now, on the way to work, I always pass one of those Powerball signs. You know, it's up to 200 billion gazillion dollars. And so I usually spend the next 10 minutes dreaming about things that I would do. And one of them may or may not have been to open a comic book shop. And if I did, there would be certain people I would ask to come work with me. You'd be one of them, Corey. I don't know if Gruber would come, but I mean, I'm talking serious wage, serious benefits with retirement and healthcare and all that stuff. Because as I said earlier, that was one of my big regrets, is that I could never give these guys enough to make it a living. Not just, you know, yeah, you're going to hang at a comic store until you get old enough and you can't. So, and it was always something because, you know, when I've talked about it on the podcast, I got that one great idea left to do a comic shop, whether I do it or not, never knows. But Mike would have been the first person I'd call to say, hey, I'm doing it. Let's do it.
Not enough parking.
And now I'm like, you know what? Did you ever hear the time that Mike almost died at Crazy Comics?
No.
Yeah, I think you heard about it, but you didn't realize how close he came to death. Now, imagine if you will. Okay, we got a shopping mall, and I had...
Well, no, it was a strip mall.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Strip mall. And parking out front, and then the main street. Now, I had it set up so that the glass counters were against the glass window. And so when you're sitting there behind the counter, yeah, it was only 500 square feet. You could see everywhere in the shop, and you could look out the window. And there was a roundabout at the section just a little bit east of us. Some lady apparently had a heart attack, passed out, hit the accelerator, hit the roundabout, doing about 80, went airborne, landed in front of our store, and then crashed into the fence in a ditch that was on the other side.
So he was working that day.
He was working that day.
Okay.
A piece of the car flew out and smashed into the window of the beauty parlor next door, which oddly enough was the last day she was ever open. I think it freaked her out enough where she left. Out. Now, a customer of mine, one of the better customers I've ever had, Dixon Germain, he was great at Hot Comics, and he followed me into Crazy Comics. For some reason, he parked in back of the store and walked around. Instead of parking in front, had he parked in front, that car would have gone into the shop. And, Corey, you know the layout of the shop.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where the hell they would have hidden. You know, again, physics, maybe the car would have
known.
No, they couldn't have hidden. And the way the car angled, it was angling towards the shop. I mean, it didn't angle towards the street. It didn't angle towards the other side of the street, which ironically was a funeral home. I just remember being told this story, and I was like, oh, my God. Because even had that piece of smashing the beauty salon gone into our store, the way the cash register was set up, I could have been it. It's just for the sake of God, fates, or the flying spaghetti monster, Dixon parked him back that day. I remember I showed up, I parked, I was like, what the hell is going on? And I came in and I had, you know, tell the cops, I said, you know, I'm the owner of the store here. What's going on? Oh, it was an accident, blah, blah, blah. Found out more about what had happened later. And in the store was Dixon and Mike because they couldn't leave because everything was blocked off. There was only one way into the parking lot and back. And so, yeah, just crazy times. Good thing we named it that, huh?
Yeah. Well, there's really no good way to segue.
No, except we're going to miss this. And in 2020, you can go away now.
Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. That's Joe, Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. So here's the ads. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast. And he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong. Because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. Here's the other podcasts I do. And Joe? What's going on the eBays?
It's been a pretty wild week on the eBays. I mean, it's kind of weird. I think the weekends are when people go nuts because I will go away and then I'll think, oh, okay, one or two sales. And I come back, 13 sales and all over the place. I mean, I sold a DC Comics Presents Annual Number 1. Corey, tell them what was in DC Comics Presents Annual Number 1.
Superwoman.
Nope, that was number 2, I believe.
Oh, then it was Shazam. Superman nope, that versus was number 3. Captain America.
Nope.
Really?
Oh, you owe me a dime for this one. No, this was...
I thought this Superwoman was in all four of those.
No, she was in... I don't know if she was in... I don't think she was in this one. This one was Superman, Golden Age Superman, versus Lex Luthor and Alexander Luthor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a very cool story. Again, just showing that you could do stories with the different multiverse. You know, again, this was pre-crisis. So I sold a signed copy of Warrior Nun Arela versus Razor. This one dates way back because it was a commemorative edition that came out in 1996, and it was signed by the artist Ben Dunn. And, of course, Warrior Nun Arela and Razor were part of the Bad Girl craze and one of the big crossovers that occurred. I sold a Sandman number 19. Corey, do you know what the two versions of Sandman 19 are?
I don't. I know that that's the first of the two Shakespeare stories.
Yep, Midsummer's Night Dream. There's a correctly printed version.
Oh, yeah, and that's right.
Non-correct printed version. And oddly enough, having read both, so well written that I didn't notice. Maybe just because I'm not very smart on Shakespeare. Corey, did you read Emma Frost when it came out in 2013?
Yes, I did.
Yep, I sold number 2. Didn't know I had it. House of Yang, number 2 from Carlton, 1975. It's just one of those random ones they must have picked up somewhere. Corey, I know you're a big Star Wars droids fan, right?
Yeah, sure.
Only thing I like better are Transformers and My Little Pony. Yeah. Well, again, droids came out after Star Wars Return of the Jedi, and the droids miniseries came on. And at the same time, the toys that came out for droids, I think Ewok was another toy line, Power of the Force, nobody cared. Most of these toy lines have the most expensive figures available from the original line, because again, if nobody's collecting it and maybe 15 years later it comes back, people suddenly want it. So, but I found out what I had all the way back from the first days of Hot Comics. I had these pile of coins that were from the Star Wars Power of the Force line. Because what they would do is you'd have a figure and then they had a little coin on it. And I didn't know what I found them the other day. It just how they survived 30 years and then not get lost is beyond me. But I was like, okay, well, I know they're prime. I know they're vintage. So I put them on. The first one I sold was a gold coin from a character called Jord Dusat. I have no idea who it is. The figure looks like a joke, but I know what it looks like because if I find the figure, it's a $100 figure. If I can match it with the gun and the coin, it goes up. I just decided to sell the coin. Oh, by the way, I got other coins on eBay as well. So if you're looking for a few, sold a nice run of X-Force, the 2008 run, 3 from 25 in various shapes. This is like really dark X-Force. I sold them cheap. I just wanted to get rid of them. Let's see. To round out the run, Zombie Tramp number 61. That's from Action Lab. They usually do nudie covers. This one was the nudie cover. They call it risque, but it, a couple Lady Death Platinum swimsuit issues from Avatar. So, and even something interesting, something called Game Trade Magazine, which I believe was published for, I think Alliance. It was kind of like a pre-order game thing, much like previews and advanced comics are today. And this would be just for games. And they would come bagged. There would usually be some previews inside it that were kind of fun, exclusive promo cards. For some reason, I ran into a box of these, which is weird because I don't recall actually having that because I didn't sell games. So I might have picked these up from some other comic shop that might have closed and I picked up their inventory. But bagged and sealed, they still got a little zing to them, and I sold one issue, $198. And I do have other ones there. So if you are inclined, come take a look and wait, what is this? Huh. I sold an MCBA Association 30-year pin. I wonder who bought that. Duns, what? Very strange. Could it be? Let's see. Minstrel in the Gallery. Oh, man, I'm going to get screwed on that one. I bet you that guy doesn't even give good feedback. You know what I'm saying, Corey?
Yeah, probably not.
I better leave him some feedback.
He's probably just some jackhole.
Let's see. Swell guy, except for that raccoon smell. There. You know me, I love to leave feedback, and I love to sell stuff on eBay, so come check it out. eBay, I'm under Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. As a listener of this here show, if you hear something you like, come get some.
And then before we get into anything else, I have been reading through some old interviews and fanzines and stuff. And I have, does Joe know?
Uh-oh.
So, Joe, starting in 1961 up to, let's say, 1985, who were the editors-in-chief at Marvel?
Editors-in-chief?
Yeah.
Was it, wait, give me those dates again.
From, let's say, well, you could go from 1951, but let's say the Marvel age, 1961 to 86, the first 25 years of Marvel. Who were the editors-in-chief?
Would that be Stan Lee?
That's the first one, yes.
I don't know, does Marv Goodman count? Because he had a lot of creative control over what the hell was going on.
Wolfman was an editor-in-chief for a while.
No, I said Goodman. As in Marvin.
Oh, no. No, Goodman was the publisher.
Because in the 70s, didn't it get passed around like a hot potato?
Yes. I'll give you the list. It's Stan. Then Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas.
Then Len Wein. Marv Wolfman.
Okay.
Archie Goodwin. And Jim Shooter. However, I read an interview that in 1971... Stan Lee dropped by. There was a school in New York. I can't remember the name of it because I didn't go there, but a lot of comic artists would teach there, including Harvey Kurtzman. Joe, tell the people who Harvey Kurtzman is.
I think he was part of EC Comics Mad Magazine until he got booted out and tried to make his own line that I think it's fondly remembered, but I don't think it's sold worth anything.
Yeah, he was the editor of Two-Fisted Tales, Frontline Combat, and Mad. And then he's the guy who told Gaines to turn Mad into a magazine and then tried to get 51% of it, and Gaines told him to take a hike. But in 1971, Stan Lee dropped by that school where Harvey Kurtzman was teaching and asked if he wanted to be Marvel's next editor-in-chief.
Ooh.
Now, Harvey said no, which, I'm going to be blunt, looking at Harvey Kurtzman, Harvey's a great guy, a good editor, never, ever, 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 ever put a book out on time. And if you pick up the reprint of the magazine he did for Hugh Hefner, Trump, they have an interview with Hugh Hefner from the time and said, Harvey Kurtzman's the guy, is a guy who you could give an unlimited budget to and he would still overspend. But I was reading and Kurtzman said, yeah, you know, there, Stan dropped by the school, offered me the editor-in-chief position. I thought it over for a couple of days and said no. And next thing I know, Roy Thomas was the editor-in-chief of Marvel. So I thought that was just fascinating, to be honest. And no place to cram it into the show other than to put it here, because I wanted to get it out there, because by next week I will have moved on to other stuff. Oh, but yeah. Now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I finally open up my Lifesavers sweet storybook. Oh, man.
Oh.
It's all the five flavors. It used to be all the different flavors. Well, cheapness. I'm putting that back away.
Yep.
It's freaking and geeky. Joe, what are you freaking on?
You know, on the plus side, if you keep those lightsabers long enough, they become real chewy. So you don't have to worry about hard candy.
Oh, yeah. That's always tasty.
I don't want to do any more of these shows where we utilize our friends who have passed away. So I'd be happy if we never have to do that again. Sadly, it probably happened because we're all getting older. And it is jarring to, you know, wake up and hop on Facebook and I did catch it from the MCBA's page, and again, at old school, I'm thinking old school because with Mike, and it's jarring, but it was a good way to do it. And of course, the first thing you do is like with that, you know, with all the, I think it's the pro wrestling in a score. It's like, ah, fake. And then I look to see who posted it, and I'm like, fuck, it's not fake. So my heart and my condolences out to Lisa and the Edmondson family, and, of course, everybody in the comic community, because we're all going to grieve this in our own way. Sorry, I just derailed my brain. Well, I know the other thing I'm freaking on is my work schedule. Oh, my gosh. I keep getting bing, bing, bing. This is changing. That's changing. As near as I can tell, this week I'm working Wednesday through Saturday, 4 days. Now, last week I did the training that I was bitching about. This is the training they were trying to send me down to go North Carolina, which, again, I wouldn't have minded. I've never been to North Carolina. I had all the comic shops mapped out I was going to go visit. Be a great episode. Where in the world is Cray? Although I did hear if I was on the base that they were doing, that the internet there sucked. So I don't know, maybe I could have done a mobile hotspot. We still could have done a show, but regardless. The training, by the way, did kind of suck. It was basically for new leads. You know, the TSA hierarchy is you're a TSO, training security officer, a lead, and a supervisor, and then into a manager. I've been a lead for 15 out of my 18 years there, and this was such a basic class. Here's how you communicate with someone who is in a bad mood. Again, I tried to be positive. It wasn't bad. It was weird that what could have taken 2 weeks and had me sent away with hotel and airfare, I was able to do at headquarters in 4 days. And some of it, you know, I look at it like, okay, this is good review. And it also helps. Sometimes it gives, I don't know how you would say, I have the terminology for what I've been practicing by instinct or just by habit anyways. But really, as far as 4 days, it was like, this was really, really kind of, it was a waste, but I got paid for it. So who the hell cares? Again, this week, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm
working. How is that different from any other week?
Well, usually when I'm at the job, I know what I'm doing. Because a lot of it's like, well, how do you handle crisis management? I said, oh, I don't know. If you spot something in a bag that looks like a bomb, I know exactly what to do. Everybody get out. Call the explosive trace detectors and pray to God it's not. Can't say we've never not found anything, but I can say Minneapolis. Well, I can't even say that. Forget I said anything. This week, I worked 4 days. I think I'm off next week because remember they used to do every other week. But now instead of doing the every other week, which I enjoyed, not because I liked having a week off with pay, but it also I worked with the same team all the time. I wasn't being, you know, exposed to different people. Even the training wasn't bad. There was just three of us in a room far enough apart doing it remotely. But now they're like, okay, well, instead of working 4 days a week, you'll be working three. And we're just going to – so now I'm going to be mixing it up with people I haven't seen in a long time. And I'm concerned because if you've been watching the news and no matter where side of the aisle you land on, political-wise, cases are going up, oddly, in states that opened up wide. And Minnesota is now one of those states. So I'm a little concerned, a little freaked about that. So who knows? Maybe we'll revisit this subject. Knock on wood that we won't. And that's really about it. I mean, other than that, well, we'll get to that when we get to geeking. Corey, what you freaking on?
There's been another round of women who have said that comic creators have been sexually exploiting them. I'm not going to go into names. You can look out on the internet and find out who. The people involved have had books that were coming out been canceled. But I also want to point out that there's a huge scandal much like this in wrestling. Mostly in England, where wrestling trainers, I'll train you if you do something for me. And it sucks so hard that people whose work I like, when you find out they're a scumbag. And my first reaction is, I wish I just didn't know anything about anybody's personal life. And there are times where you have to separate the art from the artist. You know, go back. There are writers whose books I like, who just terrible people. H.P. Lovecraft, great horror writer, horrible racist, like unbelievably over the top racist. Artists like Pablo Picasso was a garbage human being. But I put on Facebook today because I've been thinking about it all weekend, because there are people, you know, and I've talked in the past about how, you know, you read comics from the 40s. There are times they're hard to enjoy because they're so full of racism and they're so full of sexism. And there are editors who worked at companies who oversaw great books, and they were terrible garbage people who, you know, well, you know, it's the 60s. You chase your secretary around the desk. Yeah, but now it's the 80s, and you're bringing prostitutes to hang on your arm at comic conventions. Quit it. So, but what I put on Facebook today is finally what I, because I'd been seeing all sorts of reactions. And the one reaction that just finally bugged me to the point where I couldn't take it were the guys who were like, well, I've never done anything like that. No, congratulations. You've done the bare minimum of being a decent human being. Now is the time for you to shut up. Let these women tell their stories and for us to support them, because in comics and wrestling and movies and in writing and everything, this shit needs to stop. This shit where, well, I'm in the industry and I can help you get into the industry if you do a little something, something. It's always been wrong. And now finally it's starting to be called out. And it's really, you know, there's some of the people involved, there are books they've done that I love, and now when I go back to read them, if I ever do, they're going to be tainted by all this. It's kind of like Chris Benoit, one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. His matches were amazing. He rarely, if ever, had a match that wasn't fantastic. I haven't watched any of his matches since he killed his wife and kid and committed suicide. And then afterward, it comes out that he was just a brutal abuser in the locker room. He was a, guys will be guys, and he was ribbing you. No, he would do horrific torture shit to new people coming into the business. And it just, even thinking about it, my skin crawls. And hopefully we don't get more revelations like this, not because I want this stuff shoved away, but because it's all out in the open now and people will just stop. So that's the main thing I am freaking on. Just, people need to quit being dirtbags. Joe?
Yes, sir.
What you geeking on?
Corey, when you go to Walmart to pick up your books, the DC stuff, did you get your DC limited edition Hershey bars?
No. And I will tell you, this weekend I went to try and pick up the last couple, because I wasn't able to find Swamp Thing number 5 anywhere. I was since able to find it. Was able to pick up a Flash number 5. Wonder Woman 84 is canceled. No one knows if it actually ever made it into stores or not. But now they have these 4-packs. And there is no way in hell I would buy them. You can't tell any of the books that are in them. It's got, here's a collectible comic backing board. And this is pack 1 of 5, 2 of 5, 3 of 5, 4 of 5, 4 of 5. And if you put all the backing boards together, it makes a scene. Well, what are the comics inside? I don't know.
Now, see, here's where I don't know if they're emulating Marvel. Because the reason why Marvel is successful doing this, because that first comic that you see is exclusive to Walmart. So it's a Walmart variant. And the first person who finds them, gets them on eBay, is going to make a ton of money. Everybody else, it's going to kind of go, whatever. Because even now, like, I've got a couple here. Here, X-Men number 1 has its own variant. Only at Walmart. That's the key. It says it because it's 3 great Marvel comics, 1 terrific price. And then there's a Marvel Spider-Man one, the one that J.J. Abrams is writing, or was it him or his son? I forget what the deal was. Henry's there, too.
Yeah, his son is basically the one behind it, and the dad is kind of helping him put it together.
I know there's been Captain Marvel ones, and so as long as it says only in Walmart, the few packs I have seen online, the people that bought them, I asked specifically, can you tell if that's an exclusive comic or not? And really, that's the only way I think these are going to continue. I mean, somebody's always going to buy them. And what's going to happen is you may luck out and get a book that's hot because it sounds like it's going to be okay. Do we send these out to the well, right now, just the direct market. Whatever's left over goes to Walmart almost immediately. Because you have people talking about, well, I can't get orders of this Fantastic Four. And here it's sitting in these four packs. So they're not holding books back in order to see if any reorders surface. They're just liquidating and pushing them as fast as they can. And in the future, maybe we'll get an answer. If one of you know the answer, want to drop us a line and tell us. I don't know if the DC ones have the exclusive comic on it. If it says only at Walmart on it, it probably does.
Only the backing board. The comics inside, I read on Bleeding Cool where somebody had bought them, and it's basically like third print variant covers and stuff that's in the warehouse.
Yeah, so it's not like the Marvel one where that first comic is an exclusive variant cover to Walmart. Because now what it is you go and you look through the Marvels, I look and I flip and I see, well, I don't know if I really need a third-rate miniseries that's been canceled variant cover. But if I see one like X-Men, well, that's a pretty solid one. And this has been happening all over. I mean, GameStop has a Marvel 1000 variant cover that you could have bought, and they've had variant covers in the past. So that may be a way to do it. On what was the, oh, I can't think of the board we were on. Was it Minnesota Comics Squad or no, Marvel Comics?
Yeah, Marvel Comics, 61 to 85.
Oh, I had an awesome discussion of, and it's a private group, so you have to join it to discuss. But it had a discussion of, okay, you're in charge of Marvel Comics. What do you do? And I had one little brief go around with someone where it was like, well, you're not the owner. You're in charge of it. So it still means you got to listen to the corporate dictators. But it was a fun conversation, but it also strikes me as a bunch of old comic fans that just don't have a reality bent on what's going on. We need to get them back in the drugstores. What drugstores? We need to do it this way. Cheaper paper. I think, Corey, didn't we talk about many podcasts ago?
Paper is the least cost.
And going by cheaper paper, no, that paper is more expensive. The nice shiny glossy we got is actually cheaper because more people are using it.
What got me?
What?
We need to bring back all the creators who worked at Marvel in the 70s. Well, nobody bought the Gary Conway Spider-Man book. Nobody bought the Roger Stern miniseries. They bring these creators back and nobody buys the books. So yeah, your nostalgia is cool, but when you're given a chance, are you picking it up? Are you picking up that Gary Conway Spider-Man book? Are you picking up that Doug Mensch Master of Kung Fu story? Are you picking up that Marv Wolfman, that Roy Thomas Conan story? Because if you're not...
Neil Adams is doing a Fantastic Four. Here's your chance.
Yo, you're not going to... Yeah, if you're not going to buy the books when they bring them back, they're not going to bring them back.
You know, and this also reminds me a lot of when I had Hot Comics and the Image crowd was coming, and we had some of the older guys like Brian and Pat coming in. They don't need, you know, they're pining for comics back in the 60s. And you're like, no. And I understand what they're saying, but I enjoy Bendis's runs for the most part. I enjoy the hell out of what Hickman's doing. I want to know where he's going with it. I don't need you to tell me a story that I can go pick up a Marvel Unlimited, the Epic line, read through my Essentials, Showcase, that's been done already. I mean, it'd be cool to see a few of them to be redone. And one of the topics Corey and I were going to cover in the next couple of podcasts is like our top 10, five. If we do 10, we'll be here all day. Superman stories. And there are some I'm going to mention that I think if I was a creator, I would redo this story because I don't think anybody remembers it other than me. And it'd be a cool way to just have some fun with a character, you know. Yeah, tweak it a little for today's sensibilities. But, you know, the fact that I remember these things, having read them 30 years ago, maybe 40 with the way I read comics, says something. So... And maybe Corey and I will visit that too. You know, we're in charge of Marvel Comics. What are we going to do? We've done that before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Should we do it again? Look at that. We're lining these podcasts up for you. Next thing you know, we're going to have an all new Ask the Strode. Anyways, I did not read a lot because, like I said, I was at training, and when I got home, I was tired. Oh, the training was early, like 7. Because it was nationwide, I had to be there at 7. So East Coasters had to be there by 6, which was fine for the AM guys. But I can tell you, the AM guy who was in my class, by the time we got out of there 4 o'clock, he was dead to the world. I was just finally getting awake. So, yeah, nothing read. I did do something I haven't done in a while. I actually went and visited a few thrift stores over North St. Paul. Corey remembers that area. That's where Christie's Comics was.
Oh, yeah.
For a while. That whole strip.
There used to be a really cool used bookstore there, too.
Still there. It wasn't open, but it was there.
We may have to drop by.
Oh, we'll make it a stop by. And, of course, I went into some of the different thrift stores. Not everything was open, but some are. Now that the restrictions are lifted, I think some of these guys are ready to go. The one I usually go to quite a bit, I had new management because I walked in and they were rechanging things. One of the guys who donated quite a bit to the MCBA is that he has his Hot Wheels there year-round and sells them on whatever, not consignment, but whatever deal you have with a antique store. And the new owner was telling us, yeah, new management. So they're just rearranging the store, which is kind of neat because they're putting the cash register at the front of the store instead of the back of the store. That tells you old school mentality, that they trust the fact that no kid's going to come walking in the store, grab something and go running out. Not that he wants it. They're just running to run. So anyways, I got to visit a couple of them. And as you can hear, all my stuff is falling out. I found a Hot Wheel I've been looking for called Duck and Roll. It's basically a giant rubber ducky on wheels. I'm a simple guy. I like simple things. I found a lamp from that was in the shape of Split Rock Lighthouse, which is one of the most beautiful lighthouses ever. Did we ever get to see that, Corey, when we journeyed up north?
Why, yes, we did.
Okay, good. So you know what I'm talking about. And I got a plate that says pizza on it. So now I have a pizza plate. In the other store I visited, besides a couple of used things, I picked up some comics that it was kind of fun because I was finding comics I'd never seen before. There was a Dell comic called Famous Indian Tribes, which, again, was an early four-color one. And theirs was priced okay. I mean, I could find it cheaper on eBay. I did pick up a book, Blue Bolt. Corey, tell the kids who made Blue Bolt.
That was a Kirby creation.
With?
Joe Simon, back in the 40s, before they landed at Marvel to do Captain America.
I'll take a look at who published this. This was a Verotic reprint. So a little beat up, but it'd be kind of fun to read. The other
Joe?
One I picked up.
Does Joe know?
Uh-oh.
Who's the publisher of Verotic?
Oh, I was a rock guy. Glenn Danzig?
Yes.
Glenn, ooh, I got it. Danzig. I got one right. Ooh. See, and I got to say earlier when we were talking about the editors, most of what I knew from listening to Corey talk during the podcast. I'm finishing up. I've got 1 year left in the American Comic Book Chronicles. I'm telling you, folks, if you can afford it, pick these books up, especially if they're during the years you were collecting comics. I believe I have the 80s one behind me somewhere. I'm going to read that next because it's just the 90s is so much fun because I could compare what was going on with what was going on at my shop. And, you know, I don't want to go off too much on it, but I did pick up a book I don't think was mentioned in there. It was a Cliffhanger book. Tell the folks who published Cliffhanger, Corey.
Cliffhanger was one of the imprints of Jim Lee's Wildstorm that was supposed to be kind of their hot artist book. So hot. You had Joe Madura's, what was that? His Dungeons and Dragons comic, whatever it was that will never...
Oh, Battle Chasers? Yeah, yeah.
That will never, ever, ever, ever...
Three issues ever and disappeared, yeah,
be
yeah.
...completed. Danger Girl.
Yeah, that was in there.
That was... J. Scott Campbell, and I don't remember what the other one was.
I don't Battle Chaser. Crimson.
Oh, Crimson, yeah. With
Romero's.
Humberto Ramos.
Ramos. Yeah, I've got it here on page, if you happen to have your American Comic Book Chronicles, the 1990s, it's on page 252, Hanging from a Cliff is what they called it. And because they had the Homage Studio, which had Kurt Busiek's Astro City and Leave It to Chance. And the first
loved
three
Leave
again.
It to Chance. Loved Leave It to Chance.
Oh, it was
anything by Paul Smith is going to be beautiful.
Worth picking up. It was a lot of fun. I've got the three oversized editions downstairs somewhere. Yeah, he's got J. Scott Campbell's Danger Girl, Humberto Ramirez Crimson, and the only problems was that these guys could not release their work on a yearly regular schedule. 10-month period for four issues of Danger Girl, three issues of Battle Chasers published, and 4 months later, five, and then 5 months later, number five, and I believe Fathom started there too. Oh, almost. No. Fathom almost joined Cliffhanger. Ended up going.
Had their own. He started his own publishing company. Crimson did come out on time, though.
Yeah. So, anyways, but the one I picked up, I don't recall ever reading. Two Step, Warren Ellis, Amanda Connor. And if you excuse me while I fire up the old Cray 3000, I'm going to see, because what I've noticed as we're talking and we're in the, there it is, Two Step. Sometimes some of these publishers end up doing like one or two copies. This one did three and one book. So maybe that was the whole story. It says it's a humor book from Warren Ellis with Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. And they, of course, did The Pro, which we'll talk about when we do our only over 18 show. Let's see. This was had a humorously disgusting sight gag, such as a rat smoking a cigarette, a cat going to the bathroom. The characters were pleased, polished in appearance, take place in the candy-coated, colored Mardi Gras-like London, filled with belly dancers, musicians, anthemotropic animals. If I said that right, and a lot more. So, again, I've never read it, so it was kind of fun to see. Because, you know, you think usually you find something like, oh, yeah, unless you're, like, horribly underpricing something. But, so I picked up a couple comics, and that was kind of fun. So, the other thing I did, and, of course, Corey, happy belated Father's Day.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you as well.
It's amazing that, yes, there's a national holiday celebrating the fact that I had sex. Sorry, that one was stolen from Last Kiss Comics, another worthy one. Our south of the metro area, Twin Cities, is Nurse Strand Big Wood State Park. It's weird because it's like nestled in the middle of farmland, but it's got some really large and just beautiful trees, some very nice trails. The highlight of the place is a place called Hidden Falls, which is a really short, trying to do the math here, like sixth of a mile hike. And when you get there, of course, that's where all the kids are swimming and playing and screaming. And I just want a nice picture of the waterfall. And then suddenly, poof, kid jumps in under the waterfall, whatever. Not a lot of rain going through, because if it was, they wouldn't be swimming there. I'm telling you that. But just a beautiful walk. Chris and I took a couple loops on some of the trails. We ended it short because there was weather moving in. And as we're in the woods, you keep hearing, you know, you ever hear the thunderstorm? Boom, boom, boom. And you're like, okay, I think it's time for us to get the hell out of here. Started raining by the time we left. As we drove away, it was really raining. Didn't see any lightning as we headed north. The severe stuff headed south again. But we will probably head back, because the south end of the park has a lot more trails, no public areas like picnic areas or campgrounds or anything like that. And so we would just park and walk. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we got a good exercise in. It was kind of our Chris and I have been trying to to find places to walk around the Twin Cities, just get our brains out of the pandemic mode. The fact that, you know, she works from home. I during the day, I try to hide, try to stay out of her way because, you know, I don't want to get the wife mad at me. Don't touch the wine bottles. I don't care what you're using that wine glass for. Put it back. I'm breaking them around here. She's busy. She didn't hear nothing. So it was kind of nice. And we post that stuff up. Take pictures as we walk. Not too bad. Little buggy. I did get, despite using bug spray, I did get one mosquito that got quite a bit of me. Ooh, did that a bloody splotch. I think when I was a kid, I used to love watching them drill in and get filled. And right before they're like, oh, not so much fun as an adult. So that's pretty much for me. Corey, what you geeking on?
I talked a couple of weeks ago about how Marvel was dumping more of their omnibuses.
Omnibuses.
Yeah. Oh, so I now have all of Frank Miller's Daredevil in omnibus form.
Ooh. What did that cost you?
$120 for three omnibuses.
Through whom?
A combination of Amazon and eBay.
Nice. I wish I could think of what I want. Most of the ones I want.
Marvel Universe by John Byrne that we saw down at Cliff Collectibles. Yeah, somebody was blowing it out on eBay for $25, and it's like, oh, okay, still sealed? Cool. And with that, I also got the Guardians of the Galaxy by Abnett Lanning, also for $25. So obviously this person just ordered them off of Marvel's discount and shipped them. My favorite 50 online.
$50, by the way, is the cheapest one available right now. So
yeah, I tend to.
Still cheap if you want them. Just $20 cheap.
Sinister Cinema has been saying for the last couple of years that they're shutting down. They no longer put out a annual catalog, but they are continuing part-time. This year they say that if sales are good, they'll continue part-time, but this is the last selection of the drive-in double features they do, which I have been buying for literally 30 years. What it is, they take two crappy movies, have a bunch of intermissions and a bunch of trailers and put them all on one DVD. They used to put them on videotape. Now they put them on a DVD. And, you know, they're low-budget genre movies, you know, action, you know, teenage juvenile delinquent movies or exploitation movies or science fiction or horror or whatever. They're just grade B, C, D, Z. They're putting out their last batch of those, so I threw in my order for that. At the group home, thank goodness, visits are now allowed. So for the first time since the end of February, clients are able to have their family come visit. They do have to sit outside. The family members have their temperature checked. They have to wear masks. The clients have to wear masks. But it's really good because a lot of the clients say he have not understood why they can't see their family. You can tell them, oh, it's because of this virus that's really dangerous. And they'll shake, you know, they'll nod their head like they understand. And then 5 minutes later, they're upset that their family can't come visit. Comic-wise, I also dragged out, you know, as I'm trying to make room and put stuff in boxes, I found a copy of Comics Journal number 100, which is where I found Harvey Kurtzman said that Stan Lee offered him the job of editor-in-chief. And it's funny how different things are. Comics Journal 100 came out in 85, and they were just jumping on the Return Jack Kirby's artwork bandwagon. But they still had one foot in mainstream comics. So they were still getting letters from Roy Thomas and Bill Mantlo complaining about how they cover mainstream comics and how they treat superhero comics poorly. But they're also doing reviews of the more highbrow stuff that they would eventually start publishing. So it's this very weird mix of, you know, kind of your Marvel. They're covering Marvel and DC and Carlton closing down. And also, R. Crumb's got this new thing coming out, and Los Bros Hernandez are doing this. And it's just weird confluence of everything bumping against each other. But there's one short interview in there that I do not remember ever reading. Issue 86 of the Comics Journal. And if you could get your hands on it, you should, because it's a huge interview with William Gaines. Probably the longest comic-focused interview he ever did. And in issue 100, they follow up with him. And this is, you know, 85, right after Al Feldstein had left the editorship of MAD. I have actually spoken with Al Feldstein before he passed away about why he left MAD, and he was upset that some of the decisions being made business-wise were starting to hurt the finances, because that's when Bill Gaines pulled back on the paperback reprints, and he pulled back on this, and not as much of that. And what Gaines said was that, well, Al's wife got sick, and he wanted to spend more time taking care of her. Al said, Bill was pulling back on a lot of publishing stuff because it was too much work for him, and I wasn't going to be making as much money. So if I'm going to be doing the same amount of work for less money, I'm not going to work for him anymore. But it's interesting, especially when Gaines talks about how once John Ficarra took over as editor, he had nothing to do with the magazine anymore, other than the financial stuff. Because they would say, oh, well, you know, what about this? What about this? And he goes, they don't consult me on anything. When something comes up, I vote against it. They all vote for it. I'm outvoted. So... what a wonderful way he ran that business, man. I love reading stuff like that, especially Bill Gaines was this executive who just didn't want to work. And he didn't have to. And then we got new comics coming. Still looks like a couple of Marvel trade paperbacks are in there. Oh, my gosh. Marvel actually putting out some comics? Oh! So, that'll be showing up this weekend. And that's what I'm geeking on. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on for an hour and a half.
Holy cow, did you see the late breaking news? Michael Keaton's in talk to maybe be in the Flash movie.
Yes.
And appear in other. Oh, my gosh. That's
huge. You know what's funny about that? Everybody online is like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. I almost think that the internet was invented for people who were mad when he was Batman in 1988.
What, Mr. Mom?
Mr. Mom and the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure are going to make a Batman movie? This will be terrible. And now he's coming back. He's not going to be Batman from what I hear. He's just going to be Bruce Wayne.
Well, that would make sense. He's a little old to be Batman.
Yep. And let's be honest. If they're ever going to do a Dark Knight Returns live-action movie, it's got to be him.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited about that. That could be fun. But right now, they're just in talks.
Yes.
Just to get us all excited.
Yes.
Bastards.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Corey, I'd like you to take your drink, your favorite tasty beverage, and raise it one last time for our friend Mike Edmondson. One can imagine as Mike's approaching the pearly gate, he'll look up and see a smiling face he hasn't seen in a while, one with a twinkle in his eye, a little bit of mischief. I can imagine Nick Post is looking at him and saying, Mike, welcome home. I got some guys by in here I'd like you to meet. Stan, Jack, CC Peck, Jerry, Joe. Mike, I'm going to miss you. It's just cons aren't going to be the same without you. My life's not going to be the same without you. Thoughts to Mike's lovely wife, Lisa, and his family. That's all I got, Corey. Hit my music. Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
on, bitches!